The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. The second half of Chapter 5, The Synthesis of the Systems, starting on page 46. In psychological fact, this method translates itself into the progressive surrender of the ego with its whole field and all its apparatus to the beyond ego, with its vast and incalculable but always inevitable workings. Certainly, this is no shortcut or easy sadhana. It requires a colossal faith, an absolute courage, and above all, an unflinching patience. For it implies three stages of which only the last can be wholly blissful or rapid. The attempt of the ego to enter into contact with the divine, the wide, full, and therefore laborious preparation of the whole lower nature by the divine working to receive and become the higher nature, and the eventual transformation. In fact, however, the divine strength, often unobserved and behind the veil, substitutes itself for our weakness and supports us through all our failings of faith, courage, and patience. It makes the blind to see and the lame to stride over the hills. The intellect becomes aware of a law that beneficently insists and a succor that upholds. The heart speaks of a master of all things and friend of man, or a universal mother who upholds through all stumblings. Therefore, this path is at once the most difficult imaginable, and yet, in comparison with the magnitude of its effort and object, the most easy and sure of all. There are three outstanding features of this action of the higher when it works integrally on the lower nature. In the first place, it does not act according to a fixed system and succession as in the specialized methods of yoga, but with a sort of free, scattered, and yet gradually intensive and purposeful working determined by the temperament of the individual in whom it operates, the helpful materials which his nature offers, and the obstacles which it presents to purification and perfection. In a sense, therefore, each man in this path has his own method of yoga. Yet are there certain broad lines of working common to all, which enable us to construct not indeed a routine system, but yet some kind of shastra, or scientific method of the synthetic yoga. Secondly, the process, being integral, accepts our nature such as it stands, organized by our past evolution, and without rejecting anything essential, compels all to undergo a divine change. Everything in us is seized by the hands of a mighty artificer and transformed into a clear image of that which it now seeks confusedly to present. In that ever-progressive experience, we begin to perceive how this lower manifestation is constituted, and that everything in it, however seemingly deformed or petty or vile, is the more or less distorted or imperfect figure of some element or action in the harmony of the divine nature. We begin to understand what the Vedic rishis meant when they spoke of the human forefathers fashioning the gods as a smith forges the crude material in his smithy. Thirdly, the divine power in us uses all life as the means of this integral yoga. every experience and outer contact with our world environment, however trifling or however disastrous, is used for the work. And every inner experience, even to the most repellent suffering or the most humiliating fall, becomes a step on the path to perfection. And we recognize in ourselves, with opened eyes, the method of God in the world, his purpose of light in the obscure, of might in the weak and fallen, of delight in what is grievous and miserable. We see the divine method to be the same in the lower and in the higher working. Only in the one, it is pursued tardily and obscurely through the subconscious in nature. In the other, it becomes swift and self-conscious, and the instrument confesses the hand of the master. All life is a yoga of nature, seeking to manifest God within itself. Yoga marks the stage at which this effort becomes capable of self-awareness, and therefore of right completion in the individual. It is a gathering up and concentration of the movements dispersed and loosely combined in the lower evolution. An integral method and an integral result. First, an integral realization of divine being, not only a realization of the One in its indistinguishable unity, but also in its multitude of aspects which are also necessary to the complete knowledge of it by the relative consciousness. Not only realization of unity in the self, but of unity in the infinite diversity of activities, worlds, and creatures. Therefore, also an integral liberation. Not only the freedom born of contact and identification of the individual being in all its parts with the divine, Sayuja Mukti, by which it can become free, even in its separation, even in the duality, not only the Salokya Mukti, by which the whole conscious existence dwells in the same status of being as the divine, in the state of Satchidananda, but also the acquisition of the divine nature by the transformation of this lower being into the human image of the divine, Sadharmya Mukti, and the complete and final release of all, the liberation of the consciousness from the transitory mold of the ego and its unification with the one being, universal both in the world and the individual, and transcendentally one, both in the world and beyond all universe. By this integral realization and liberation, the perfect harmony of the results of knowledge, love, and works. For there is attained the complete release from ego and identification in being with the One in all and beyond all. But since the attaining consciousness is not limited by its attainment, we win also the unity in beatitude and the harmonized diversity in love, so that all relations of the play remain possible to us, even while we retain on the heights of our being the eternal oneness with the Beloved. And by a similar wideness, being capable of a freedom in spirit that embraces life and does not depend upon withdrawal from life, we are able to become, without egoism, bondage, or reaction, the channel in our mind and body for a divine action poured out freely upon the world. The divine existence is of the nature not only of freedom, but of purity, beatitude, and perfection. An integral purity which shall enable on the one hand the perfect reflection of the divine being in ourselves, and on the other, the perfect outpouring of its truth and law in us, in the terms of life, and through the right functioning of the complex instrument we are in our outer parts, is the condition of an integral liberty. Its result is an integral beatitude, in which there becomes possible at once the ananda of all that is in the world, seen as symbols of the divine, and the ananda of that which is not world. And it prepares the integral perfection of our humanity as a type of the divine in the conditions of the human manifestation, a perfection founded on a certain free universality of being, of love and joy, of play of knowledge, and a play of will in power, and will in unegoistic action. This integrality also can be attained by the integral yoga. Perfection includes perfection of mind and body, so that the highest results of Raja Yoga and Hatha Yoga should be contained in the widest formula of the synthesis finally to be effected by mankind. At any rate, a full development of the general mental and physical faculties and experiences attainable by humanity through yoga must be included in the scope of the integral method. Nor would these have any raison d'être unless employed for an integral mental and physical life. Such a mental and physical life would be, in its nature, a translation of the spiritual existence into its right mental and physical values. Thus, we would arrive at a synthesis of the 3 degrees of nature and of the 3 modes of human existence which she has evolved or is evolving. We would include in the scope of our liberated being and perfected modes of activity the material life, our base, and the mental life, our intermediate instrument. Nor would the integrality to which we aspire be real or even possible if it were confined to the individual. Since our divine perfection embraces the realization of ourselves in being, in life, and in love through others as well as through ourselves, the extension of our liberty and of its results in others would be the inevitable outcome, as well as the broadest utility of our liberation and perfection. And the constant and inherent attempt of such an extension would be towards its increasing and ultimately complete generalization in mankind. The divinizing of the normal material life of man and of his great secular attempt of mental and moral self-culture in the individual and the race by this integralization of a widely perfect spiritual existence would thus be the crown, alike of our individual and of our common effort. Such a consummation being no other than the kingdom of heaven within, reproduced in the kingdom of heaven without, would be also the true fulfillment of the great dream, cherished in different terms by the world's religions. The widest synthesis of perfection possible to thought is the sole effort entirely worthy of those whose dedicated vision perceives that God dwells concealed in humanity. And thus ends the introduction on page 50. Next will be part 1, the Yoga of Divine Works.